Brian Had a Dream. 10,000 movies, 40 years. This is his journey, and this is your invitation to join along. This is the quest for 10,000. Welcome back once again, listeners. I'm Ben.
And I'm Brian.
And welcome to the quest for 10,000, our twice monthly journey with Brian as he tries to watch 10,000 movies before he turns 40. This episode, we come to what has now become a recurring theme for the quest for 10,000, and that is Brian and I breaking down a movie that we're about to go see before we go see it. And this week is
a little movie based on an incident in American history from the 19th century, Captain America Civil War.
I think it may not be based on the 19th
century. I've been misinformed.
Wouldn't it be great, though, if Iron Man showed
up? Where are the muskets?
If Iron Man showed up with, like, an Abraham Lincoln beard, that'd be pretty awesome. That'd be pretty badass. No, it's Captain America Civil War, based on a comic book series in about 2008, 2009.
Yeah, about 10 years ago,
When the comic series came out. It's the third installment in the Captain America franchise. Chris Evans is Captain America. Robert Downey Jr. is Tony Stark, Iron Man.
Let's be fair, though. Nobody really is thinking of this as a Captain America sequel. It's not a cap because it's so big. It's almost more like Avengers 2.5.
Right. Or maybe even what we had hoped Avengers 2.
I don't hate Ultron. I don't love it, but I don't hate it.
Right. Well, and I think you're probably right for that, right in saying that about this movie. I think the same could probably have been said for Captain America Winter Soldier, which I just
loved. It was a Captain America movie, though.
Captain America movie, but you could also sort of call it Avengers 2 or something like that. It was a good movie. So you're probably right about that. Remind me, is this the beginning of Phase 3 or the end of Phase 2?
This is the kickoff of Phase 3. They are calling Ant-Man the end of Phase 2. This is the first movie in Phase 3.
Right. So we get Ant-Man again, I believe, in this film.
Ant-Man is back. They talked about Wasp making an appearance, but they decided against it.
Right. They want to save that for the sequel to Ant-Man. Mm-hmm. We get Black Panther for the first time.
We do get Black Panther.
One thing I'm really excited about is getting to see more of the Vision, who I thought was the breakout character from Avengers 2. We see more of the Winter Soldier, this time with some actual dialogue probably thrown in, since he's not the brainwashed Russian assassin anymore, but the recovering Bucky Barnes.
Well, yeah, and his appearance is going to be the linchpin for the whole movie.
Yeah, it's really the device, the plot.
It feels like in the comic books, it was pretty set up that there were two sides. The side that said that superheroes did not have a right to a personal life and a secret identity outside of their identity as superheroes, and they should not be able to expect that, and they should have to register with the government and make it public and all that, so that they could be held accountable for their actions. And the other side that said, no, we need to be able to perform and have a home life. But so far, at least, in the Marvel, which is one thing that separated Marvel movies historically from DC movies in a way, but what the Marvel movies have not really talked about anybody's secret identity. Like, it's been
really
very much in the background.
And it doesn't seem
so
like
that can't really be what this is about. Because why would Steve Rogers care about having a secret identity when he lives on an army base and that's the only place he ever seems to go?
I think the emphasis is a little bit different. In the trailers, you can see that it's kind of about regulation. How are you going to hold these heroes accountable? And it is different. The comic book series was set up at a time, and I heard this talked about on another podcast I listened to, the Major Spoilers podcast. You should check that podcast out, too. It's one of my favorites. But they were saying how in the comic book series, it was pretty obvious. And they were sort of setting the deck to be Captain America's right.
Yeah.
Iron Man's wrong.
Yeah, well, but
and
but,
then,
well, it's a different ball game because in the comic books, when you had your identity at stake, and in some ways that puts you in physical risk, it puts your family at physical risk, but it was everything that meant something to you. And without that element, it will be interesting to see what elements they focus on, because I think it does take some of the danger of what we're talking about out of the equation.
Well, and I think one of the elements, too, and a lot of what Phase 3 is going to be about, is continuing to expand that universe, build that universe beyond sort of the core characters that made up the first Avengers movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think that seems to be, even if it's not been a stated goal, it seems to be a needed goal for Marvel. So in addition to Vision, Winter Soldier, Ant-Man,
Spider-Man,
and Black Panther make their Marvel film debuts. Each will get their own solo movie coming up. I'm obviously excited about Spider-Man. Let's get to him in a minute. But what do you know first just about Black Panther? Do you know much about Black Panther?
I mean, I know the character. I don't. He seems to be like a super. He's a monarch or a royal descendant.
Wakanda.
African
Which
nation.
Which was alluded to in Avengers 2, Claw.
I mean, he has tons of money. And to me, it seems like he is a different continent's version of Iron Man, in a way.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. He's sort of a combination of Iron Man, Captain America, for his country. He's kind of got technology, but he's kind of this superior physical specimen anyway. Kind of this chosen one, a national symbol. So it's kind of like a combination of the two of those.
I do know Chadwick Boseman is Black Panther, and he has played Jackie Robinson, James Brown, and Black Panther. That is a pretty nice little resume for a guy who is, I don't think, 30 years old. He's older than I thought he was. He's 39. I did not realize he was that old.
I'm really excited to see that character. I think he's one of the most interesting Marvel characters that they have. It also adds some much-needed diversity, I think.
It'll
too,
be interesting
to
see
front
how
line of their cast some cultural
well, and it
diversity.
Will, and it will go a long ways to like helping Marvel branch out and see if they can, because one thing they're going to have to do going forward in one way is grow their fan base, and characters like this can help with that, and it'll be interesting to see how successful they are in growing outside of the dedicated fan base they have, but they need it to expand. And also to keep people from getting superhero fatigue, which it seems like every time a big superhero movie comes out, there are a million think pieces about how the death of the superhero genre, and, you know, I don't see it coming. Because
right.
What I don't think they understand is how the game has changed in a way. And they lament it, but whatever. They don't have to go see it. I mean,
right.
You know, not all movies are made for everybody.
Now, let's talk about Spider-Man.
Okay.
How excited are you? Spider-Man.
You know, pretty excited. When I was a kid, I never really read a lot of Marvel comic books, although, you know, now looking back, I kind of wish I had. But I was mostly a DC guy, and just, you know, at the time, you picked one, and that was the one I picked, and you didn't really... It's too expensive. Comic book collecting is an expensive hobby, period. So you just... I wasn't really exposed to Spider-Man as a kid growing up, reading the books, but I like the Tobey Maguire movies. I think they get kind of maligned a little unfairly looking back on them now. And I like the Amazing Spider-Man movies. Spider-Man's, in a lot of ways, the way they, I think, the character will work will be very similar to the way Tony Stark works. It'll just be like a younger high school version of Tony without money.
And probably a little less morally ambiguous. A little less selfish in attitude. Maybe still obviously the wisecracking, but Spider-Man's always been about responsibility and sacrifice.
Well, it does seem like in Ultron, and maybe even before then, Tony Stark as a character had started to take himself a little too seriously.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was intentional. I think that's what they wanted to have happen. But it feels like Spider-Man will help bring some levity to that, and it'll also be interesting to see almost all the superheroes that we have been in contact with. They know who they are, like they
right.
have a very firm sense of self.
Right.
And Spider-Man presumably will not have that foundation of who am I, which that'll be interesting to see how that works.
Yeah, that will be interesting to see how it works. I think most people could probably predict or expect that Spider-Man is the breakout character, kind of the character that after the movie's over, besides maybe the leads, Tony Stark and Captain America, that Spider-Man would be the other character everybody's going to be talking
mm-hmm.
the most about. Who do you think is the other character maybe that people might come
I
out?
Think Ant-Man.
Like,
I think Ant-Man.
I was going to say the same thing.
I don't think his movie it was well received, but I don't think it it kind of flew under the radar a little bit. And but seeing him interact with these other characters, depending on the lines he gets and how it plays, has a chance to really make you. Because I know the Super Bowl commercial with him and Hulk was pretty good. Yeah, nice little.
I think too. I think Ant-Man is going to get the biggest bump, probably of any of these any of these characters.
It may make his sequel movie something people want to see.
Right, and I think too, what's really going to come, maybe from a critical perspective, is I think Paul Rudd will get a huge amount of credit for kind of holding his own. Not that his career has not been solid, but that he'll get, I think, a lot of credit for.
Well, it's a kind of like
for adding and enhancing, kind of
in a sports analogy. You talk about an athlete making the leap. This could be the leap for Paul Rudd.
And I do think that Black Panther will get a lot of buzz, and that he'll be featured prominently in a couple of cool scenes to kind of pave the way for his movie.
Well, I mean, he is, comparably, his character probably is even less well-known than Ant-Man was before his movie.
Right.
And his shtick isn't as easily sellable or explainable as Ant-Man's. He shrinks.
The hook isn't quite there.
Yeah, because Ant-Man, you don't have to be told. You can understand somebody shrinking down and growing. You can understand that. That's self-explanatory. And it creates all sorts of fun possibilities. But this movie will have to give us some groundwork for Black Panther. The other question I have, you know, we talked a little bit about it earlier. It feels like from the commercials and previews for this movie that the whole linchpin of the fight is, I like Bucky, I don't.
I would agree with that, and I would say probably the whole climactic part of the movie is who is willing to die for that belief. Because my last prediction before we stop recording and go see the movie is that I think, because this is what happened in the comic book series, a character is going to die at the end of this movie, a prominent character.
I think.
And the two choices are Captain America or Iron Man.
Well, they're the two most logical choices. I mean, clearly Black Panther's not dying.
Right.
So
what do you think? Who do you think?
I think you have to. I think in order for the series to mature, two things have to happen. You have to show that you can handle one of your main characters leaving and continue on and not lose a beat. And that hasn't happened yet. And B, you need to add some real elements of danger and real elements of risk to your main characters. Otherwise, you run the risk of all of them being untouchable, which does, when they run in to save the day, you're not worried because you know Iron Man's going to be in the next movie.
Right.
So it's just, you know, so I think one of them has to, just for the growth of the franchise. And I think that they're going to try to pull a fast one or try to tamper expectations. In the comic books, it's Captain America that dies. And so I think they're not going to go that route. I think Tony Stark and Iron Man. Part of my reasoning for that is I think Robert Downey Jr. may be tired of soldiering on as the face of this, you know, almost $1 trillion franchise.
might be willing to sort of move on or pass the mantle on a little bit. I agree with that as well. So let's go see what happens if anybody dies or if, you know, everyone dies. Who knows what could happen? It is the 19th century and medicine isn't what it is now. All right, we'll catch you in a few.
Hello friends, Ben here. Now, usually in the episodes like the ones Brian and I have recorded where we've gone to see a movie, this interim time between before the movie and after the movie has been filled with some sort of little Apple loop beat. But this time, I'm coming to you just to let you know that Brian and I, rather than record live together to share our thoughts on the movie, actually use Google Hangouts to record our thoughts due to our scheduling situation. And so the audio for this next part may not be as sharp or crisp as we would like it. My apologies for that. Again, we're novices, still learning this podcasting game a little bit as far as sound goes, so we appreciate your patience with us as we do so. Still, I hope you enjoy our thoughts and comments, and that you can share your own with us on Twitter or Brian's blog. And now on with the show.
Welcome back, everybody. We have just seen Captain America: Civil War, and Brian and I first want to welcome a third man to this podcast weave. My buddy Matt from Charlotte, North Carolina. This is the best way maybe to describe Matt. If you take my love of comics, Brian's love of movies, they had a baby, you would get Matt. He is the biggest Captain America fan I know. He probably actually loves Spider-Man even more, so that makes him a great partner in this conversation about what we thought about Captain America Civil War. So welcome, Matt.
All right, glad to be here. Thank you.
So in the first part of the podcast, Brian and I were able to talk a little bit about what our expectations of the movie going in were. Matt, since you're just joining us now, why don't you tell us what were your expectations before you saw the movie?
I think at this point, I just know I got to go into a Marvel movie and I'm going to enjoy it. It doesn't matter if it's about a raccoon or a guy who can shrink to an ant. Like, I'm just going to like everything they're going to put out. But, I mean, in the back of your mind, there has to be the one that's going to just be a flop. But as good as Captain America 2 was with the Russo brothers and just Chris Evans being Captain America, I was really confident that this was going to be a fantastic movie. And I got really excited. I have a geeky watch, and I came up with a way to have a countdown for about 2 weeks out. So, like, every time I look at my watch, I would know how long until Civil War, down to the minute and then the second. So it was pretty high up there in terms of anticipation.
Did it meet your expectations?
Absolutely, yeah. I enjoyed it. It's interesting because when Ben gave me the prompt to think of a couple of things I liked and a couple of things I didn't like, it was really easy to pick out the two things I didn't like, but it was harder to put my finger on the things I really did like. And that's not a criticism of the movie, it's just that I think so much worked really well. It was a 2.5-hour movie that just flew past, and I just loved it. Like, it was a comic book movie. Like, in its purest form, that's the best way to describe it.
Yeah, I think that captures a lot of what I thought about the movie as well. What about you, Brian? Did it meet expectations for you?
Yeah, I would say rough ballpark. It's somewhere in the realm of Guardians of the Galaxy. It's not quite the Avengers because I don't think anything can get to that high watermark for me right now. You'd have to do something first, but it's comparable to Guardians of the Galaxy in a strong, you know, top three or four Marvel movies.
It's true for me. Would you say the same, Matt?
Yeah, easily, yeah. I guess if you think of, like, top third, middle third, bottom third, this is definitely top third.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say so, too. Well, the Avengers was just so new and so something that we had spent, for most of us, 20 years waiting for. So it sort of has that going for it that, in a way, this movie can't recapture today, except for maybe having Spider-Man join in the fun.
Yeah. Well, that mission of Spider-Man, that gets them into some specific highlights, like we said, having gone over general sort of things. So, Brian, for you, what were one or two specific highlights for you in this film?
Well, the highlights were Spider-Man and Ant-Man. I think Ant-Man got a major boost in credibility. And I know a lot of people saw the Ant-Man movie, but my prediction is that movie's rentals and DVD sales will climb exponentially because of his exposure in this movie.
I think the coolest thing about this movie is just how perfectly everybody is cast. I mean, everybody who plays one of these characters just owns that character, and Chris Evans is Captain America. Tom Holland, this is the third time I'm saying this for a different person, but he is Spider-Man, and, you know, just everybody in this movie, even Thunderbolt Ross, like, that guy just plays whoever, or William Hurt, I think, plays Thunderbolt Ross, and they're all just great, and I just don't understand how these movies keep getting such good actors. It doesn't make sense. Like, there has to be peak good actor, and we're going to reach it soon or something. I don't know.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see when, like, the big characters, when Robert Downey Jr. says, "I've had enough," who comes in and takes on that mantle, and will it be... Because, you know, whoever it is, they're going to be under immense pressure and immense, you know, comparisons to what he's done. And that'll be interesting to see how the Marvel movies cross that threshold.
Yeah, but I got to say, the casting directors are probably, for these films, they don't get probably as much attention as they should. And you can't really think of a bad casting choice unless you go back to the first Ed Norton Incredible Hulk movie. It's not that Ed Norton was bad in that role, it's just that, you know, he ended up not being a good fit for the other stuff they were trying to do with the universe and that. And then before that, Terrence Howard maybe is Rhodey.
The other point that attaches to that is, you know, asking what's going to happen when this bunch of actors is done. If you look at Norton and Terrence Howard, we traded up, I think. You know, we got Don Cheadle, Academy Award-winning Don Cheadle, and Mark Ruffalo, who I'd never even heard of, but, I mean, he's the Hulk now. I mean, like, somehow we ended up with better actors.
Well, I mean, the Hulk, the first movie with Ed Norton sort of existed in a proto, like, pre-MCU. I mean, you know, it was there, it was part of it, but it doesn't, a lot of people's minds, it sort of like exists on the fringe, on the outside of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And the Rhodey character is a second tier character. I'm just looking, like when Chris Evans leaves, I don't know if anybody else is going to be able to pick up that mantle and run as well as he has, but maybe they can.
It will be interesting. I think main highlight is just all the little subtle pieces in these movies. Probably my favorite line in the whole film was actually from Black Widow. But there's one point where she's fighting Winter Soldier. She kind of looks at him and she goes, you know, you at least could act like you recognize me. Which, in the comics, is kind of an Easter egg because in the comic book storylines, they, of course, had a relationship. They knew each other because he was used by the Russians and she was a covert agent for the Russians before defecting and joining S.H.I.E.L.D. and all that sort of thing. So these movies, they're so good at doing the epic moments, the broad moments, but the little subtle bits of character interaction and interplay, you know, I really love that part. It's that character development and those pieces of it. It's what makes those movies fun and it makes them really stand in contrast to what DC is trying to do, I think, also. I like the DC films, but they haven't quite captured that interplay as perfectly as Marvel has yet. Well, what else? You know, mention those. Any other highlights that we just have to mention before we move on to some of the things we felt the film could have improved upon?
I think one thing that really stood out for me was having read the Civil War comics, you know, whenever they came out 5 or 6 years ago. And I purposely didn't go back and reread them just because I wanted to experience this as its own thing. But one of the things I remember from that time period was, you know, there was Team Cap and there was Team Iron Man. And I remember very clearly knowing what side the writer, Mark Miller, and Marvel editorial was on. And even though this showed up in a Captain America movie, one of the things I really liked was that in terms of the good guys, there's a lot of moral shading. Like, it wasn't very clear cut who we were supposed to cheer for. Because there were times when I was there with Iron Man, and I was like, you know, he's right. And there were times that I was like, all right, Captain America's got a point. And it went back and forth, and I love that it wasn't, like, there wasn't one set thing that we were supposed to cheer for. And when you get to the airport, like, you're actually cheering for them not to be fighting. At the same time, you're like, this is awesome. And so, you know, this is, I love how well that the Russo brothers handled that, and especially in comparison to how I think the comics didn't handle that well.
Yeah. And you mentioned the airport scene. Yeah, that, I don't think we can go much further without talking about that, and specifically for me, talking about Spider-Man. that was just, you know, earlier in Brian and my part, before the movie, we talked about breakout characters, Ant-Man, Black Panther, and then, of course, Spider-Man, and every hope you could have possibly had for that character and how he could be integrated into the Marvel Universe, cinematic universe, for me, that was just perfect. And I say that as someone who doesn't have the internet hate for Tobey Maguire or Andrew Garfield, enjoyed all those movies except Spider-Man 3 with Tobey Maguire. And even can go back and look at them and appreciate them. But the execution of Spider-Man, Tom Holland, it was just absolutely right on. Great, great tone, and he was fantastic, and I completely buy him as Spider-Man. And I think the levels of expectation for that movie now, even with a weird title like Homecoming, is off the charts. So, what about you, Brian? Any other highlights?
The movie was good. I will say that to me, he said they handled it well as far as the which side we should be on, and maybe it's just me reading into it, but I felt like it was firmly Captain America was the one who was more in the right than Tony. That Tony almost tended towards fascism sometimes, but.
Well, yeah, different strokes, different folks, your mileage may vary. So, but that gets us into really maybe some of the things that didn't work quite so well for us in this movie.
I think the movie, the movie just sped along, but the place where it kind of just screeched to halt was when they got to Siberia, when Captain America and Tony and Winter Soldier are in there, and they realize that Zemo is there, and then Zemo starts monologuing about how he set this whole thing up out of revenge for what happened to his family, and it totally took me out of the movie, because I was like, wait, how did that work? And I started trying to play it back in my head, and I was just like, there are way too many things that he could not have orchestrated to get all three of these characters here at the same moment. And that's when I realized these complicated revenge stories don't work for unless you're following the character very closely, like Count of Monte Cristo or something like that. Zemo was a great character, like he had some really great stuff going on, but I need to see more to be convinced. And so I just kind of got sucked out of the movie for a few minutes trying to figure out how he did what he did.
Yeah, to be like a lone wolf who's acting on his own. He had incredible, resources and luck and just able to do it. It really did seem a little incredulous.
And I guess, the other thing that I wish could have seen a little bit different was just that everybody in this movie has a great character arc except the title character, Captain America. Steve kind of starts in the same place that he ends. And, that was one of the great things about Winter Soldier and the first Avenger is that Steve started in a different place and he grew as a character, and more so first Avenger than Winter Soldier, but still that was great watching Steve evolve as a character, and he just did it, and just everything reinforced for him. He was making the right decision. He didn't have to question himself like Tony did. He didn't have to.
You're right about that.
And that ties into maybe my criticism as well. This felt more like Avengers 3, Iron Man 3,
4,
and 0.5. We did like Captain America 3. And I think some of that, the way it was sort of serving all those other narratives, it never felt too like it didn't do a good job of juggling all those things, but it got right up close to the line of being bloated, and for me that's what took me out of the movie, is that I realized it was getting really close to that line, and very thankful that it never went over. But it did feel a little bit like a bait and switch to me, that it was more Avengers 3 than anything. Not so much like a Captain America movie in the same way First Avenger, Winter Soldier did.
Well, we talked about this briefly after the movie. It feels like the Captain America movies all come out at a time where they are trying to bridge to something else. You know what I'm saying? Like, he never gets a movie that's just the only purpose of the movie is just to promote or just to be about that character. They're all serving a purpose and trying to get us into the next phase or whatever, and that's how they've used Captain so far, which is unfair sometimes to the character.
Yeah, but I would say the difference in those two and this one is that the focus was centrally on Cap, and like Matt said, he develops as a character and that sort of thing. And this one, again, you could have very easily called it Avengers 3.
Well, that was more
starring Captain America.
There was more Captain development in Age of Ultron than there was in this movie.
Quite possibly. There's one other character maybe who didn't have the strongest of character arcs. And Brian, you had a particular criticism about that. So
I don't think they know what to do. I don't think they know what to do with Black Widow. I think they box her into a corner. It's like every movie, she's just apparently desperate to find some other superhero to latch onto to be her soulmate, because she's got. I mean, in Winter Soldier, she was pretty clearly, her and Captain had a great tension and a great chemistry. And then in Age of Ultron, she's clearly focused on Hulk. And now she's clearly sort of toying with Tony to a certain degree, but it's like she's just bouncing around. I don't know what her angle is or where she's at. And they don't know either, I don't think.
I think there is an argument you can make from a character standpoint, just from the fact that she came from the former Soviet Union and she's been kind of cut loose from that, and she's still trying to figure out whose side she's on, in a way. I mean, maybe that's there, or or maybe they just don't know what to do with her. Like, I could see it going either way.
Yeah, and it does sort of underscore, I think there is a problem in some of these Marvel movies that again, and we don't need to get too deep into this at this point, but what to do with female characters in general, I think that's been a weaker point. We haven't had a film yet that focuses solely on a female character. It says a lot about Scarlett Johansson's execution of the role that even with some of that handicap maybe in the writing and in the tone, that she's still incredibly popular and I think really could carry a movie by herself. But it still does feel like it's a little clunky a little bit in all that. Yeah, who does she like and why does it seem that the only way she can relate to someone is to have these very intense tensions of that sort of thing. But that said, I think, again, we should probably reiterate, we all really liked this movie.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun and a great kickstart to Phase 3. Well, that's all the time we have now for the quest for 10,000. We thank Matt again for joining us. Listeners, we thank you for joining us. If you'd like to drop a line about your thoughts on Captain America's Civil War, agree, disagree with us, have other questions or insights, you can find us at 10K, T-E-N-K Movies on Twitter, or see Brian's blog, 10kmovies.com. Until next time, we hope your week is a 10.
10 plus.
10 plus. Borderline
11.